my name is John O'Farrell.
And I'm Angela Barnes.
And together, we are history.
This is the
We Are History podcast. We're going to do that joke every week.
Every single episode.
Yeah. Well, we are looking at quirky, interesting, maybe slightly unexplored backwaters of history. You know, having a humorous sideways look at the olden days. And this week, we are looking at Angela.
At me?
We're looking at Angela.
We're looking at the British invasion of Iceland, which, John, until I met you, I didn't even know was a thing.
I don't know why I'm so interested in this.
You're a little bit obsessed with the word I use, John.
I think it's because it was just such a polite invasion. the word invasion sounds so aggressive and imperialist and destructive. But basically, the British army turned up at Reykjavik on May the 10th, 1940, and went, "I'm so embarrassed. Do you mind awfully if we invade you? I know it's an awfully rum thing, but it's sort of a bit awkward with Hitler in Norway, so we won't make any damage and we'll, you know." So it's basically like that. It was the most charming, polite invasion there's ever been in history, is my view.
So why did they? I suppose we need to look at the wider context.
Yes.
During World War II, early on, so Hitler has invaded Norway and Denmark.
That's right. Chamberlain is Prime Minister. Mm-hmm. Churchill is First Sea Lord of the Admiralty, or whatever you call him, in charge of the Navy. And Britain was very alarmed and caught on the hop by the invasion of Norway and Denmark. So suddenly the whole of the North Atlantic, you know, is very exposed to German U-boats.
For America and Britain, right?
Yeah. I mean, that whole... America's still neutral, of course, at this point, but... Mm-hmm. People looked at the North Sea and they looked at the North Atlantic and thought, okay, our shipping is vulnerable now to U-boat bases operating out of Norway. So Britain occupied the Faroe Islands, right, which was an easy warm-up. And then on May the 10th, which is a big day in World War II, Hitler invaded Belgium, Holland, attacked France, Luxembourg. But Britain hit back because it had plans. It had plans on the same day that we should occupy Iceland. And the bizarre thing was that because of Norway falling, Chamberlain had been ousted as Prime Minister. So it was Churchill's first day on the job on May the 10th.
That's one hell of a first day.
It's
on
a first
job.
Day. You're looking through, what's on today? Can I change the speed dials on my phone?
Yeah, exactly.
No, I'm afraid the Low Countries have been invaded. Hitler's rolling his tanks westward, and we're invading Iceland. Right. Skip lunch. Maybe work through lunch today is what Churchill must have had to say.
Just having your induction.
Yes, health and safety
health
talk.
Health and safety procedures. See who wears the high vis vest.
Yeah, yeah. Mugs but, in the kitchen. All that. He was straight in at the deep end, poor Winston.
Right. So the Low Countries, Belgium, France have fallen.
Over that month, they
over
fell.
The month. Yeah. So, but on May the 10th,
it was that day that the Hitler launched his attack westward that I don't think we should talk about World War II.
It's
a bit Brexity, isn't it? They, the Brits,
yes.
The Brits back then landed and carried out what was called Operation Fork. And this was to secure bases in Iceland before the Germans did, because there was a worry that if we didn't invade Iceland, then the Germans would, as they had taken Denmark. And there's very close ties between Iceland and Denmark, of course. The Danish king was really effectively the ruler of Iceland as well as Denmark. When I say ruler, he was the head of state. Iceland wasn't completely independent from Denmark at that point. And so when Denmark fell, they declared independence, and they looked very vulnerable and exposed. They had no army to speak of, 60 reservists, and a couple of policemen on the shore. The Brits turn up at dawn with this army and start disembarking at Reykjavik. And there's one very cross Icelandic policeman saying, "You can't invade us. We're a neutral country." And the Brits are going, "Well, don't speak Icelandic. I'm sorry. Anyone do Norse mythology at Cambridge?"
Well, it's worth... Firstly, is there any evidence that the Germans were ever planning to invade Iceland?
There were counter-invasion plans later drawn up, but no, there's no evidence that Germany were, but I think that's probably because Hitler had his mind on other things.
Yeah.
He was furious that Britain had got these bases in Iceland, and that sort of caught him off the on the hop a bit. And I would have thought he might have guessed that we were going to invade Iceland. I have, you know, us, I'm doing it again. He would have thought that Britain would invade Iceland because of what happened in the Faroe Islands. But the British Navy, you know, had the wherewithal to get troops to Iceland quickly. It was geographically close.
I mean, it was very quick.
Yeah, it was quick, yeah.
Wasn't it? And they weren't the most prepared troops.
No, I mean, that's the other thing. The plan, it was sort of cobbled together very quickly. The plan was drawn up. The plan for the invasion was drawn up on the boat on the way, on the boats on the way over there.
Yeah.
The recruits they took were not exactly the SAS crack elite commandos. They're a bunch of teenagers who were fresh-faced, never been out of the country before, had hardly learned how to hold a rifle.
Some of them had never shot a rifle till they got them.
Yeah, and didn't have to do it and when they got there either. Yeah. So they were just a bunch of lads, really, going on their first school trip away. it's like when you're into Boulogne shoplifting. It's that sort of thing.
Oh, well, lads are going to invade Iceland.
But they didn't know where they were going, but it was not a very well-kept secret.
Well, I heard they sort of got on the train at Euston.
Yes.
Travelled up to Scotland. Mm. And the information was leaked.
Right.
By the time they got to Scotland, they all knew what the mission was.
Right, right. And they must have thought, wow, that sounds cold or whatever. It was May.
Iceland, giveaway.
Iceland was always a clue. So, yeah, it was a very bizarre invasion. So they sailed into the harbour. Now, Britain had violated Iceland's neutrality, and this was pointed out to them. And then, you know, the Brits said, well, you know, Hitler violated Denmark's neutrality. There was a worry that there were Germans in Iceland. There was a German consulate there, and it was supposed to be a surprise, a British landing. And we had a little reconnaissance plane fly over Iceland to look at suitable landing grounds. And the instructions to the pilot were, don't fly over Reykjavik. Fly over Reykjavik, got it. Yeah, no, don't. So Reykjavik, don't fly over it because you'll alert them because there are no planes in Iceland. There's no airport in Iceland.
They'd never see planes.
Be a big
obvious,
clue.
Isn't it? A big old plane comes over.
So Reykjavik, fly over. No, don't fly over Reykjavik. And of course, this guy flies over Reykjavik, wakes up the whole town. A plane. What's a plane doing over Iceland? So
including the German consulate.
Yeah, exactly. So he rushed to the bathroom with all his papers and started burning all their documents in the
bath.
Yeah, the Germans there.
Yeah.
And they're burning all their secret papers. I can't imagine quite what that was. Probably like deleting your history on the laptop. It's probably all his, I don't know what he was doing. But anyway, we the Brits got there and they quickly tried to get the German consulate and that was secured. There were landings in other places apart from Reykjavik, the key ports. And 750 Marines were suddenly, you know, stationed there. It was explained that Iceland's laws would be respected, the Parliament would continue, and that Britain would withdraw as soon as it was safe.
Right. So how did the Icelandics react to these 750 teenage Brits turning it? Oh, God, it sounds like Benidorm Britain or something.
Yeah, I mean, be honest, the reason I'm so interested in this is because I've always fancied writing about it. It seems slightly comic, a little episode that nobody really knows about, and it's not of great strategic military value. There were no shots fired when the Brits landed. There were no tanks rolling up the beaches. You know, it was just some teenagers disembarking, and they'd all been seasick on the boat, so they're all, you know, green, and it's freezing cold.
But of course, Iceland, a bit of a shock.
Yeah, to them. These lads were from sort of, you know, Bolton or Croydon or something. And suddenly they're having to put up Nissen huts. Suddenly got to accommodate 750 lads in Iceland. The book we both read has got pictures in it of these bleak looking Nissen huts. And these lads. And then soon after, they stationed another 4,000 soldiers there.
Yeah.
And it's like the fire festival in 1940. It's like
in tents.
Yeah.
It's like, don't want to be in a tent in Iceland.
No. It's the World War II equivalent of fire. That's what it is. Yeah.
Slightly better organised.
Yes. So first thing the Brits did is actually organise a football match with the Icelanders. And
classic. Isn't that classic British?
A bit of PR. Let's play a game of association football. And rather tactfully, the Brits lost 1-0.
Obviously, they did on purpose.
They did. And everyone laughed at the idea of England losing to Iceland, which was, of course, something that was going to be repeated in Euro 2016 when they knocked us out.
I know very little about football, but didn't Iceland have a really good Euro 2016?
They did. They knocked us out of the tournament.
I feel like I should just say I've got a 12-week-old puppy who's in the other room and she is not happy that we're in here recording this. So if you hear a little whining, we are checking on her every now and then.
She's so interested in Iceland and World War II.
She really is.
She feels like she's missing out.
I could bring her in and see if she'll just sit on the floor.
She might sit on your lap.
That's less noisy. Shall we see if she...
Yeah, all right.
Oh, good. There we go. Just hear a little dog panting in the microphone. That'll be Tina the cockapoo.
So one of the problems was that no one spoke Icelandic on the English side. So it was all done through, you know, relying on the Icelanders to speak English.
Right.
Iceland was a much more isolated place, you know, back in 1940.
Of course, there weren't easy jet flights.
No, there were no quick flights. There was no airport, in fact. Yes, thank you, Tina the dog. Good comment. I know you feel strongly about this.
She's got more input than I have.
So, yeah, so the Brits built the airport. So the airport where you, I think I might be right in saying, the airport where you land now when you fly to Reykjavik is the one built by the British when they occupied Iceland in 1940.
You're welcome, Iceland.
Yes. A lot of thanks you give us for it. Compensation. Did you read about all the compensation claims?
Yeah. Well, so the Brits basically said that they would compensate the Icelanders for any damage or any, you know, anything that was a cause of them being there.
Yeah. So there was, right, like, if a lorry scraped your gate of your farm, then you could put in a claim. And
funnily enough, quite a lot of Icelanders suffered.
Incredible damage.
Oh, so much damage. Yeah. By the marauding troops through their country.
Now, in very remote parts of Iceland, there were walls being knocked down and roofs being blown off because of the exhaust of a lorry or whatever. So, yeah, these Icelanders were suddenly realised they were onto something. And it cost the Brits quite a lot of money, but it was
fair play to them.
Yeah, who wouldn't?
These people have just come and invaded their country.
Exactly. But the only thing I didn't read much about in the book I read was that the relations between the soldiers and the Ingrid Johansdóttir of all the Icelandic women. There's not much about that.
Presumably, so the population of Iceland at the time was, 160,000, I think?
It's very small,
around that. So it's a pretty small population. If you suddenly got 5,000
young men turn up.
Young men rock up.
Yeah.
That's going to make the your odds a little
with all their fashionable Vera Lynn records and their really groovy 1940s clothes. It must have been quite a cultural shock for the Icelanders.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess so there was probably tension between young Icelandic men, presumably, and the troops.
I didn't find much evidence of that, though.
The only thing I found was that they would wind them up by going past their sentries and yelling Heil Hitler or singing Deutschland über alles at them.
Well, actually,
just to wind them up a bit.
The other thing that's slightly complicated is there was a sort of Nordic Aryan movement which had Quisling in Norway, and there was some people in Iceland who obviously sympathised with this idea of the Viking master race. So there was a bit of that, but there's also the Communist Party of Iceland, since the Nazi-Soviet pact, were not on the side of making war against Hitler. So the communists were hostile to the capitalist Britain occupying their space. Of course, soon as Hitler invaded the Soviet Union, they were all like, we demand a second front, Britain. Why are you not attacking the Nazis more aggressively? But at the time, there was the political opposition to Britain was more marked by the fact that not only the communists, but also the fascists in Iceland, who were the minority, it should be said, but they were there.
And also, I guess, in a population of 160,000, a minority.
Yeah, yeah.
It's sort of.
I'm just negotiating this dog's attempt to knock the mic.
You're right.
I'm rather loving doing a podcast with a puppy on my lap. I've never done this before. The Brits said that Parliament should continue and that compensation would be paid. And so there were problems with the communist newspaper stirring up trouble against the Brits. And one or two of them were deported. One or two communists. I think even a communist MP might be whatever the equivalent of an MP is in Iceland. Right. One or two of them were, maybe they were deported to Denmark, which sounds a bit harsh. Maybe they were taken back to Britain. I can't remember.
Yeah, just send to Hitler. Send to Hitler. He'll deal with them.
But then, you know, Britain had naval bases, you know, right across the North Atlantic. It made the business of shipping to America safer and reduced British losses. Now, at that point, the Americans weren't in the war, but Roosevelt was keeping a close eye on this. And Roosevelt was much more sympathetic to the British cause than his Congress. Perhaps in the second half, we'll talk about what happened with the Americans there.
Yeah.
But it was a very dramatic sort of first month in Europe, because right throughout May, in mainland Europe, the French line collapsed at Sedan. The French were retreating on all the fronts. Britain was cut off, Dunkirk, all of that. The German tanks reaching the coast at Abbeville. Suddenly the whole British army was caught off. My dad was at Dunkirk.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and my uncle was stuck behind the lines at Belgium. And all these terrible things were happening in Europe. No one really had even gave a minute's thought to Iceland.
Yeah.
It was like the world was collapsing around their ears. Humphrey Bogart was being stood up by Ingrid Bergman at Paris, and she wore grey, the Germans wore blue, or whatever it was. And so it was incredibly dramatic time. Imagine being some soldier stuck out in Iceland
while all this is going on.
Yeah, it must have been like feeling like, A, you were probably safest place to be.
Yeah.
But also like you were missing out on the war. Probably better to be on a glacier than on the beach at, beach at Dunkirk.
Dunkirk, absolutely.
But what an experience. I mean, to be stuck out in this nowhere place where
and such a bizarre landscape as well. Yeah. Somebody from Britain,
yeah, so
glaciers and geysers and...
Yeah, and volcanoes and the tectonic plates of
Europe. It felt like being on another planet.
Yeah, like being on the moon. I don't know. Have you not been to Iceland?
I went there
a few years back. It is an amazing place because you've got the... I mean, it's sort of a symbolic landscape anyway, because you've got the tectonic plates of America and the Eurasian plates crushing up against each other. And we had this tour guide when we were there. He was like an MTV presenter. He was sort of like, had that sort of mid-Atlantic.
Brilliant.
It was like an MTV sort of, no, here we have a pretty cool scene, you see, because you got the American tectonic plate and the Eurasian plate, and they're crushed together. You can hop from America to Europe there if you like. It's pretty cool. And then, if you want to get back on the bus, we're going to see a really crazy geyser. And this afternoon, you're going to see a pretty cool volcano, which is still smoking pretty hot. So get on board and enjoy the tour, guys. And
that's great.
This was great. But, it is, the landscape, and you've got the midnight sun and you've got the northern lights. So it's like nowhere on earth.
There's a teenage boy from Bolton seeing the northern lights.
Yeah, I know. Now you just go to Sinatra's disco, but but it must have been an incredible experience.
I think we forget, don't we, as well, that people wouldn't have been as aware of what other places were like.
Absolutely.
Then, as we are now,
There was no television.
My grandmother married a man from Newfoundland.
Right.
During the war.
Wow.
And then as soon as the war, they married over here during the war. As soon as the war ended, they went back to Newfoundland. And my grandmother, being a girl who grew up in Crowborough in Sussex, suddenly found herself 8 months pregnant on a troop ship.
My God.
Travelling to Newfoundland.
Sorry, I don't understand. She got married when?
Here. It was all legit, so I'm told.
Maybe it was just a bit early.
I'm not going to do the math. And yeah, they went. They're Catholic, so obviously it's all legit.
Yeah,
and they went. She was on a troop ship back to Newfoundland with all the troops, the Newfoundland regiment, going back, and of course then arrived in St. John in Newfoundland.
How alien that must have been! My God, I'm freezing cold.
8 months pregnant. Wow. Minus 20, so 6 feet of snow.
So you're a quarter Newfoundland.
I am, yes.
Oh, that's very
indeed
interesting.
I
so
am.
Interesting detail.
In fact, I've got a map of Newfoundland on my ankle.
Have you really?
There we go.
Oh, wow, yeah.
There it is.
Cool. St. John's is hairy.
So I've got a lot of... It's winter, shut up.
I jest. Newfoundland, of course, at that point, an independent country, which people don't know.
It was 47 it became part of Canada, I think, or 48 maybe.
Completely independent country till 1947. Interesting facts.
There you go.
Google it.
So look, and another little interesting fact about Newfoundland. Why not? We go off on tangents. I think the only place possibly to have suffered a complete genocide.
Oh, really?
The Native Americans of Newfoundland were the Beartuk tribe, and they are none left.
Wow. Okay, that's not a happy note.
On a happy note.
Why don't we
get
a cup of tea?
Shall we have a little break on that?
A little break of tea and then get back to Iceland. I think it's fair enough to segue over to Newfoundland. It sort of feels sort of thematically related. And we'll come back and talk about what happened in the first year of British occupation of Iceland.
Does what's going on in the American election scare and bemuse you in equal measure?
Want to know what Biden and Trump are up to without tearing your hair out?
Then you need to listen to American Friction, the brand new podcast about the countdown to the big vote in November from the makers of Oh God, What Now?, The Bunker and Paper Cuts.
Every Friday, we'll speak to leading experts and blockbuster commentators from the United States to explain the latest news and the big issues behind the vote.
That's American Friction with me, Jacob Jarvis.
Me, Chris Jones.
And me, Nikki McCann Ramirez.
Out every Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
So, here we are talking about Iceland, the British invasion in 1940. Yep. And pretty soon the British forces settled in and the locals decided they quite liked them. The compensation scheme was bringing in a bit of money and the hilarious dodgy claims power was growing higher and higher. But living standards rose in Iceland.
Because of the dodgy claims.
Because of the dodgy claims and the British forces were not, you know, like hardened, cracked Waffen SS troops. As we say, they were lads and they were not that trained. And there was a bit of a problem that the Iceland young people were laughing at the British troops about how useless they were. So where they stopped having parades on the parade ground in the square, marching and drilling, because they were so useless at it.
These lads had not been properly trained.
No, they'd been they'd just come straight onto the boat. So when they were supposed to be marching in the square, it was like a bunch of, you know, shuffling teenagers. And so they stopped the drills because it was so unimpressive and the Icelandic teenagers were taking the mickey out of them.
Hanging out of windows.
Mocking, doing impersonating them. So then they said, okay, well, look, we'll assemble the gun on the quayside. So they
had
that'll show them. They couldn't do that properly and they get it all wrong. It's like, hang on, who's got the instructions here? And attach tab A to folding flat B.
They had guns but no gun sights or
If the Germans had invaded, they could have unequipped. If the Germans had chosen to invade at that point, they would have completely overrun the 750 British troops. It would have been quite easy. The equipment was inadequate. The soldiers were untrained. They eventually managed to fire the gun and it scared a chicken off the quayside who fell in the harbour and drowned.
There was a victim.
Occupation. Let us have a moment's silence for the chicken that died in the invasion of Iceland.
And they wonder why the Icelanders were taking the piss out of
it. Yeah, quite. But, you know, gradually the war did get closer to home. Some Icelandic boats were sunk by German U-boats. And, you know, the determination to be neutral withered. They had seen Denmark, their sort of mother country, occupied.
Yeah.
They had declared independence, you know, when that happened. And Iceland had been fighting for independence for some time. And now they felt that their independence was threatened by this British occupation. But they realised that when Britain allowed their parliament to continue sitting and that respect was shown to the, you know, the laws and the institutions of Iceland, it was nothing like the experience that Denmark was having. So there was a sense of relief that this is the Brits who had invaded, not the Germans. Because when the plane went over and the ships were seen on the horizon, it was like, who is this? It's one side or the other. They didn't know.
Hello,
thank God it's the Brits. We've got tea. You know,
bring the jam?
Yeah, exactly. It was a bit like that. So once things settled down a bit in Europe, so Churchill had been in the job now for a few more months, he actually came and visited Iceland. And this was a huge sort of excitement.
I think Churchill might have had other more important things.
You would have thought so, wouldn't you? I wonder if it was I need to should know this fact, but it might have been a stop off on a visit to see Roosevelt. Because you couldn't fly easily to Washington in those days.
Of course, yeah.
So maybe it was a stop-off. And just as Newfoundland was a great stopping-off point.
The fact is where the North Atlantic Treaty was signed.
Right, yeah.
On my tattoo is a little red dot.
Oh, okay.
And that is Ship Harbour, which is the village where my granddad was born and where the North Atlantic Treaty was signed.
So you know that musical that's out now called Come From Away?
I'm going to see it next Thursday.
Oh, it's very good.
Have you seen it?
I have seen it. I saw it in New York, actually.
There's 22 of us from my family.
Oh, fantastic.
Newfoundland Catholic.
But it's that airport where all those planes landed used to be one of the biggest airports in the world because it was the first fueling point for when you crossed the Atlantic because it was hard to get across the Atlantic in the old days. So maybe Churchill was stopping off at Iceland on the way to America.
Yeah.
Anyway, he visited. And it was a huge sort of occasion for the Icelanders to have the sort of symbolic leader of the free world in their capital. And for those soldiers there, the 5,000 Brits now, standing to attention, doing their best, you know, not to sort of wipe their nose on their sleeves.
nobody's coming. Quick, get busy.
You know, the whole experience of the Iceland was one of friendship and mutual respect. And a sense of an education for both sides, I think.
There aren't many friendly invasions.
That's why I'm so interested in it.
It does remind me of when the Dutch invaded in the 17th century.
What, here?
Here.
Yeah.
and they came via sort of Devon, Cornwall.
Yeah, it landed at Torbay, yeah.
And by all accounts,
I think people were...
They come in, do you want a pasty? You know,
well, it was sort of, they're invited. William of Orange was invited, wasn't he, by the Parliament. Actually, I think there was some sense of, oh my God, he's brought an army with him. It's not quite what we planned.
Right,
But again, there was no shots fired, particularly until you get to the sort of Battle of the Boyne.
Yeah.
But the idea of a sort of benign invasion is a curious one, because they were cross when it first happened. They were like, we're a neutral country. You can't invade us.
And they didn't have the means to
repel
it.
They had some sort of 60 reservists and a policeman.
Yeah.
And, but I think what happened was that Iceland realised that, yes, they were neutral, but the war wasn't going to ignore them. So Icelandic trawlers were sunk by German boats. There were other deaths in shipping. And they saw what was happening in Denmark, and they realised that, you know, if you have to take sides, the Allies was the side to be on.
Yeah.
So there's a sort of wider philosophical point, I think, about this, is that, you know, Iceland wanted to be neutral. We're an island. We're not in Europe. But when you've got, you know, Hitler invading,
and you have no military strength,
but
at all.
But if you have the geographical position to assist, you know, the side that is resisting this totalitarian occupation of Europe, then, you know, do you have the right to say no, we're going to keep out of it, or do you have a moral duty to say we'll take your side, however complex that is? So Ireland, for example, you know, stayed neutral, and there was a lot of controversy about that, especially after the war. Iceland wanted to be neutral and wasn't given that choice.
Yeah.
But I think perhaps by the end understood why and accepted why.
Yeah. And what might have happened if that invasion hadn't taken place, maybe, and if they had attempted to stay neutral?
Maybe Hitler would have come in. He did draw up plans, and he might have gone, look, we can sink more Allied shipping. Because actually... starving the British to death was the best chance the Germans had after the plans for invasion of Britain looked like they weren't going to work. So to sink all the British merchant shipping, which was, you know, they were sinking 20 ships a day, that would have been Hitler's best chance. So I think maybe, I don't know, who knows whether he would have. What do you think, Tina?
She
feels strongly about this. But yeah, so maybe Hitler would have invaded, but soon his attention was turned eastwards, and he was... by the summer of 1941, of course, invading the Soviet Union.
That went well, didn't it?
That's a whole other story. And it was nowhere near as nice as the invasion of Iceland. I think if you do a comparison of nice invasions, he did not learn from how to do it from the Brits.
Not an affable occupation.
Yes.
Hello, I'm Dorian Linsky.
And I'm Ian Dunn.
We are the hosts of Origin Story, the podcast that unpacks the history behind the ideas, the people and the events that shape political discourse today.
And we are back for season 5.
We're kicking off with a two-parter on George Orwell, the man, the work, the ideas. We follow him from Burma to Spain, through Second World War London, to the writing of his masterpieces Animal Farm in 1984, and how their legacy is used and misused today.
That's Origin Story Season 5, coming now from anywhere you get your podcasts.
So, after a year, America still neutral at this point.
Yes, which I think is really curious.
Yeah.
America... relieves the English garrison
and
stations its own troops there. So this is not the act of a neutral country for me. This is the act of a country...
What's their reasoning for doing it?
I suppose what Roosevelt could tell Congress was, oh, Iceland is a neutral country, so shouldn't have the British there, which is one side. We will garrison this country to secure the neutrality of this country.
We'll be neutral together.
We'll be neutral together. But what it was really doing was letting the British just focus on other things and securing American bases on this key strategic landmass on the North Atlantic.
Yeah.
But it's, you know...
Well, regardless of their neutrality...
He wouldn't have done
Iceland
the same...
Iceland being occupied by Germans is a threat to America.
Exactly. Yeah. So he wouldn't have relieved German forces anywhere, put it that way.
Yeah.
So it was a strong indication, I think, of which way the wind was blowing in America.
Yeah.
The way Roosevelt wanted the war to go and wanted to be involved in Europe. Congress didn't want America involved in Europe. And everyone thinks, oh, Japan bombed Pearl Harbor, so America came into the war in Europe. Those two things do not follow.
Right.
So Japan bombs Pearl Harbor, everyone in America thinks, well, we've got our war now. We've got our war in the Pacific.
Yeah, with
Japan. We're not going to get involved in that European war.
Yeah.
It's only 4 days later that Hitler declares war on America. So right. Hitler brought America into the European
war. Then they've no choice.
Roosevelt would have liked to have come into the European war, but it was Hitler who forced Congress's hand, as it were. But I think perhaps maybe Hitler was slightly more enraged at America because of Iceland. Maybe he was slightly more enraged because of the lend lease.
So this whole business in Iceland might have had more of an influence over the outcomes of World War II than we think.
Possibly. I mean, I think Hitler was mad to declare war on America. You know, what was he thinking?
Not known for his sanity.
No, but, you know, what's the biggest industrial power in the world? I think I'll declare war on them when I'm already fighting the British Empire and Russia, you know.
Yeah, depleted armies and...
Yeah. But maybe his sense that America was not behaving like a neutral country, which was demonstrated by Iceland, maybe that was a factor. But anyway, the Brits had to leave after a year. So all those love affairs between the lad from Bolton that we've cast into this story and the Ingrid Johansdottir, the farmer's daughter from the little village by the glacier, those romances were broken up. I think there were some marriages.
So I wonder if there were any marriages.
Do you know what? There's very little written about this whole episode. There's one book that I've found. I've researched it quite a bit because, as I say, I was hoping of writing something more about it at one point. Yeah. But I couldn't find much about marriages or love affairs, but there must have been some.
There must have been. I mean, they were there for a year.
Yeah.
Around the young teenagers.
Yes, the northern lights, the midnight sun.
And that's it, 3 hours of daylight in some parts of the...
Yeah, what are we going to do when it's dark?
Exactly.
they're replaced by the Americans, and I'm not saying the Icelanders preferred the Brits to the Americans, but the Icelanders preferred the Brits to the Americans.
We were probably slightly more civilised.
I don't know. It was, but there was a very sweet sending-off ceremony. There was speeches and goodbyes, and the Icelandic leader at the time said, "This is the only time in history where an invading force has been liked more after it's been there than when it landed."
Which I think, I wonder if that has ever happened since.
Yeah,
So he
sort of said, "You know, you came as invaders, you leave as friends."
Yeah.
And
we thought you were idiots.
But you're nice idiots.
Yeah. And, harmless idiots.
Yeah. I suppose that, you know, when the other sort of 4,000 troops turned up, they hopefully were a bit more trained and a bit more experienced. But it must have been a rum old posting to be in Iceland in 1940-41.
Yeah, central heating not really a thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
well, especially not in a tent or a Nissan hut.
Yeah, yeah, that must have been all that. Oh. I mean, I don't, you know.
I suppose they saw what was happening to people in
Belgium
and France and maybe counted their blessings a bit more.
Yeah, yeah. And then, so Iceland ended up not a neutral country.
Yep.
It joined NATO after the war. American bases were placed on Iceland ever after. And that became a source of much contention at the time. There were great protests about joining NATO. The communists felt very strongly against it. But, you know, that all changed on May the 10th when Britain invaded Iceland. It was a time that Iceland left its geographic and political isolation and became part of the world, really.
Yeah.
It became part of the geopolitics of Europe and America, I suppose.
So within a year, it sort of gained its independence from Denmark.
Within a month or two.
Part of a much wider
Yeah, so April 1990, Denmark invaded. Iceland declares independence. May the 10th, England turn up with the army.
Yeah.
I should say Britain, actually, because they would have landed from Scotland. Iceland's destiny changed, really, in that month. And what an interesting...
Yeah,
roller coaster.
I didn't know about this. You'd think it's such an interesting little bit of that.
Yeah. And then a very poor agrarian economy in the 40s, 50s and 60s. Very, very dependent on the fishing industry. Mm. Next time we had war, the word war used with Iceland, it was the Cod War.
Cod
Wars, do you remember the Cod Wars? You're probably too young.
I remember reading about them. I think, what was it, in the 70s?
It's about 73. We'd have
things
on the news.
Yeah, I was born 76, John.
Oh, I see. I was a teenager then. I was watching the news every night and there's things have turned nasty in the Cod War. And it's like, you know, it's just like some Laurence Olivier follow-up to the World at War. World at Cod War. When British naval ships have rammed Icelandic trawlers. So basically we had
Cod War just sounds like a fake war.
It doesn't. It was a Cod. It wasn't really a war. It was a trade dispute, but it did involve a little bit of a couple of ships ramming each other.
Yeah.
The Icelanders declared a 50-mile exclusion fishing zone, then a 250-mile fishing exclusion zone. And the British were like, no, we fish there, shut up. And we're big and you're small.
We do have that sense of...
Yes, yeah. And so...
But we want it.
So then they all... And then in the sort of course, in the 90s, they all gave up fishing and all became bankers, and they had this massive sort of banking boom, and they were all making millions and millions, and the crash came.
Yeah.
And they all lost all their money, and the people were arrested. There was no money coming out of the cash machines in Iceland, and they were all arrested.
They actually dealt with their bankers. They dealt with their bankers,
yeah.
Which is a refreshing concept.
Yeah. And... And it's just a very interesting country, but it sort of came into the sort of the global sphere, I think, on May the 10th, 1940, when Europe turned up in the shape of some British teenagers who all just been seasick and were desperate to lose their virginity. What a place to happen.
Lovely. Oh, that's great. Thank you very much, George. It's been fun, isn't it?
It's been fun. And I'm sorry I've talked so much, Angela.
I know this is your sort of my passion area.
Next week we'll pick one of Angela's areas of expertise. And are you willing to listen to me?
Expertise is a very strong word, John. But we'll pick something Angela's read a book about.
I think that's sort of summed up the modern history of Iceland. If you're ever inclined to get a cheap flight, go and visit the place. It's an amazing...
I'm dying to go. Yeah,
it's interesting, and they're lovely people, and all the men are big and beardy and fat, and all the women look like supermodels. So I don't know how that... It's not fair, but they're really friendly people. They all love the English, and they love the Premier League, and they'll love to talk to you about that. So visit Iceland.
So I need to go there, bone up on football.
Bone up on football. I'll be all right. And maybe visit some of the old Nissen huts.
Lovely.
All right. We'll catch you next time on the We Are History podcast.
Yeah. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can tweet us on @WeAreHistoryPod.
Fantastic. Or right. Facebook as well.
Oh, and Facebook too. We Are History Pod.
I don't do the Facebook. I'm still on Bebo.
I'm like 90% sure it's We Are History Pod group. But, you know, you'll find it.
Just MySpace. I'm on all the modern things. Catch you next time.
You can write to John's home address.
Yes.
Catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye.